All right. Hello, everybody. We are very excited to be here for Work at Life. And this week, we have a special guest, which is going to be really fun and interesting to have a chat with more than just me and Sonia. But let me just start off with introducing ourselves. So I am Maddie Grant. I'm a culture designer at Propel. And I'm here with Sonia Lacina. I'm going to send it over to her in just a second, but just to recap that our show, Work at Life, is all about that gray area between work and life, obviously, but really around all of the kind of big, deep cultural changes that are happening related to the pandemic and ways in which employers and employees, people in the workplace, can really think about how to get the most out of and be most successful in their workplaces. So we tackle lots of different topics. And in this season, we are talking about the first female recession, which is a huge, huge, big deal. And last podcast, we gave a bit of an overview of what exactly the first female recession is. So you can go back and listen to that one for some of the really horrifying stats around, the women leaving the workplace. And so today we're continuing this conversation. So I'm going to turn it over to Sonia to introduce herself and our special guest.
Yeah. So hey, everyone. I'm Sonia. I'm an organizational psychologist. I work at QuestionPro. I run the workforce business unit over there. And I loved it as I was listening to Maddie talk. We're so excited to have Meg on today. And it's funny because I feel like as some of the parts of the world are opening up, we're digital, but I'm like happy as a little kid to have my new friend on. it's like almost like we're actually together. Now we're the things that we are doing in person, we're replicating online too, and we're bringing our friends along. And Meg is just incredible. She is somebody that actually had the pleasure of meeting recently, and I felt so incredibly fortunate because it gave me this huge hope that no matter where you are in the world, no matter what's going on around you, you can meet some really incredible people. And so her and I have had several conversations, have really hit it off. And so she was one of the first individuals we wanted to bring into the show because we just thought we talked a lot about life. We talked a lot about, when Meg so beautifully coined, figuring yourself out and really thinking about what it is that you want and you're looking for. And so we just thought in those really incredible like coffee chats that we were having on Fridays, just, sitting by our laptops, that it was a conversation that more people needed to be a part of. And so Meg, welcome to our show. It is such an incredible pleasure to have you here. I'll let you introduce yourself. I gave a little bit of a preview, but I just like love your energy and love you as a person. But if you don't mind, introduce yourself a little bit and then we'll jump into our topic of the day.
Oh, thank you, Sonia and Maddie. Thank you so much for having me on. I could not be more excited. And Maddie, just hearing your intro of this podcast, I'm just like, one of my favorite quotes ever is there is no work-life balance. It's all life. The balance has to be inside you, right? Yes, right. So 100% so grateful to be here. One of the bright spots for me of this COVID era is meeting friends over LinkedIn in these virtual places. I'm based out of Chicago. I've got Sonia in Argentina. I've got Maddie now in DC. People all over the world. It's been great. So thank you so much, Sonia. So I'm Meg Newhouse. I'm co-founder and CEO of Inspirant Group. We're the home of the Unconsultants. We were founded in 2017 with the idea to disrupt traditional consulting. So we focus on transformation. You might hear digital transformation, but we look at transformation from end to end. So our tagline is from inspiration to transformation. So whenever you get that kind of spark or nugget of inspiration, like things can be different, things can be better, things can be more efficient or improved, that's when we want to come in and help you make those big dreams come true. So I love my job. I love my work and my life. It's all kind of one big thing to me. And I'm just so excited to talk with you today.
I will say, no, us are pretty lucky to have our own businesses. And even though it's obviously hard work, like you do love everything. Otherwise you wouldn't be doing it, right? Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Sonia. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say it's, it's such a, it's an interesting time. Like we were talking about, like people, I feel like so many people, and I can share a stat now, actually, I was thinking about, one of our things during this podcast is that we always share a stat. And when we were talking with Meg, preparing for this show and thinking about all great number of incredible topics that we could cover, we talked a lot about self-reflection. And so one of the things, and we'll have Meg share a little bit of her story and why we found that is such a, it's something that we've really, that really drew us in as a topic, is we also asked people around the US, you know, have you found yourself reflecting more in your life and what you wanted from the future in the past year? And almost half of the people said, absolutely. And if you combine the two, over 80% said yes, you know, at least somewhat or absolutely. And so we found that a lot of people are actually, were just shaken up. People's worlds changed in some cases, you know, really profoundly, in really abrupt ways that were out of their control. For some individuals that were, you know, maybe more fortunate, there were still changes. But it was also maybe an opportunity of working from home and saying, you know, I've been traveling a lot. I've been going through, you know, my life was very different than it is today. And I actually quite like it the way it is today. And I don't want to go back to the way things were. And so I think that, you know, crisis, tragedy does not need to be, and it should not be the only time people reflect and really search for themselves deeper to understand what it is they want. We found that in this case, it was really a catalyst for people taking a step back and saying, you know, maybe life is too short and we don't know how much time we have. And even maybe with all the time in the world, why should I spend any more time doing things that I don't absolutely love? Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the conversations that we had with Meg in preparation to our talk today, just about some of the times and reflection in her life that actually happened before COVID. But I thought, Meg, if you want to share a little bit around your reflection and how, you know, you discovered yourself and the things that, you know, you loved and the things that you wanted to change. I think seeing how many people are in that path today, I think that story would be so incredibly powerful and so incredibly helpful for those who are joining us on this show.
Yeah, thank you, Sonia. And seeing those stats, that makes me so happy. But you're so right. It's born of this crisis. And unfortunately, I think that's just human nature. I think that often we're just going through the motions of life. We're going through what life has given us. And, you know, you kind of go into the same routines and this just is what it is. I can't tell you how many people feel stuck at their jobs, stuck at work. And that idea of feeling stuck, it really, like, I have a physical reaction to that. I'm always just like, oh, I know you can't see me. Oh, like you're not, there is no one in your life is going to care more about your job or your life for that matter than you do, or that, or who should, than you. I was absolutely one of those people just kind of going through the motions. And in my mid 30s, I had a crisis. I had a, you know, gosh, I don't know if it was a midlife crisis. I hope not. But you know, I had
midlife crisis.
Yeah, my quarter life crisis. You know, an identity crisis. It really was. So it was, I remember very clearly it was 2012 and I just had a lot of changes happening and I was not coping well with them. So I had moved from a job that I loved and enjoyed doing into a job that just wasn't the right fit for me. I learned a lot, but it wasn't where I was supposed to be. And for someone who really values working and having a career and being productive in that way so much, it immediately tanked my attitude, my mental health. Add in two small children, add in moving from the city, which I love, to the suburbs, which are fine.
So many changes at once.
And I just, you know, I was not clinically diagnosed, but I could tell you that I absolutely fell into a depression and did not handle it well. My reaction was to go out late, was to go drinking, was to run away from everything that was happening. I still was able, you know, thank God, to care for my family and do my work, but I was miserable. And it was clear to the people close to me. I mean, I was upset most of the time and really sad. And, you know, I mean, I could still get out of bed in the morning, but there was a point where I say I woke up. I think I finally woke up a bit. And I was like, what am I doing? What, you know, I've got it really great. I've got a great family. I've got supportive friends. I have work that I love doing. You know, why am I behaving in this way? I need to make changes. And so I just thought through, like, what can I do? What do I need? And my husband's like, you know, let's find you a good therapist. Like, let's make sure that, you know, you get some professional help, the help you need. And I 100% am behind that. And I think we should talk about that more in this podcast. I was too lazy to take the time to go and find that right match. Cause I think there's like, it's like dating, isn't it? I mean, to find the person that you can tell your deepest, darkest secrets to. And also I am, like I said, I'm super fortunate. I do have a group of girlfriends that are that way. And not that your friends should be your therapist by any mean, but I have a group of 12 women that I've known for a very long time that everyone gives a little bit of something. So I do feel that I have people that I can talk to that can give me what I need. What I needed for myself, I found through, honestly, yoga, meditation, and just spending time like alone with my thoughts. I was always running away, like I said. So I was doing anything I could to distract myself from, I guess, like real thoughts and real feelings and real, you know, the realness of life. And again, like I said, just going through the motions and doing what I thought I had to do. But by taking that time to really like listen to myself and figure out what I needed and figure out what that unresolved trauma was. And it took time. I mean, healing takes time. It took years. And I would say I'm probably not done yet. I'm sure it's kind of ongoing. There's different levels of healing and of waking up, I think. But that was how my journey started.
I think some of what you're saying is really, really important around how it's, I think everybody wants to find solutions. Like, they, you know, something's not right, but you immediately go to the, you know, how can I fix it? As opposed to being okay with just sitting with the uncomfortableness of acknowledging that you're not okay, you know, and, but not necessarily immediately looking for a solution. And I think that's what therapy can actually do, is just help you just sit with it for a while, for, you know, a bunch of conversations. Because it doesn't immediately jump to like, oh, take this medication or, you know, whatever.
You hope not. if you have a good therapist, right?
Well, I actually laughed at that, because when I first went to therapy many years ago, I didn't remember going and I didn't know much about it. And I was, you know, I went with my like list of things I needed to work on. And so I would tell my therapist about it. And she's like, well, what do you think? I'm like, no, what do you think? Like, what do you, give me advice. Come on. And she's like, no. Like, let's think through it. And I'm like, oh, that's how this works. Oh no. Like, and at first it was so funny because I wanted, you know, finally I had been, you know, grappling with different things, you know, growing up. And I was just thinking, oh, you know, I put so much pressure on myself, or I do these different things. How do I solve that? And I really thought I was going for an answer. And it wasn't. It was, you know, understanding like what is it inside of you, what is causing that. And to your point, doing a lot of that, you know, really self-reflection and sitting with your thoughts and understanding yourself better. And Meg, I completely agree with you. I don't think it ever ends, that discovery process, because we're going to, you know, hopefully in our lives have so many highs, and we are going to have lows, like without a doubt. And, you know, hopefully they don't get too low, and sometimes they might. And they likely will. And they're going to be for different reasons. And hopefully the more people understand themselves, the better you'll have the process, both physically and mentally. Because what you were saying, you know, going through meditation, going through yoga, we store so much in our bodies as well. So I think it's an interesting balance of really taking care of the whole person. And one of the other questions that we actually asked as we were preparing for, you know, the show is, we asked people, you know, how during the time of COVID, you know, it's been a really challenging time. So what are some of the things that you're doing, you know, related to self-care more than you were doing before? And it was a select all that apply kind of question. And the vast majority of people said that they're getting more sleep. Around 62% of people said that's what they're doing, which is amazing because there's all these studies around sleep now and just how useful we're like, we're you know, back in the day, it was like, I got 2 hours of sleep and I'm really grinding through things. Where now it's like, no, like do not do that. It's so bad for you in so many ways. And then about half the people said they're exercising regularly, which is great. Eating healthier again, which is incredible. But it was interesting what you were saying too, that when you were recommended to go seek a therapist, you were saying, ah, do I really have time for that? And you found alternate solutions that actually in this question compared to, you know, 60 some percent of people that are sleeping more, around 50% of people that are exercising more regularly and eating healthier, only 11% of people actually said that they sought out counseling or therapy. Which there's been, I mean, we just came out of a mental health month. There's been so much conversation around how do you take best care of yourself? And this, these stats show that actually seeking professional help, which we do in many other areas, just hasn't become second nature for us when it comes to mental health.
I think that's so, I mean, those statistics are just so fascinating. I love data. But I think, you know, we were talking about this in, as part of the show prep, is there is still a stigma around talking about mental health. I was, you know, last month, May was Mental Health Awareness Month, and someone was talking about, I can't remember where I saw it, I wish I could, but, you know, people would have no problem sharing if their child was suffering from cancer, you know, and some sort of physical illness that they could share about. But to say your child was suffering from depression or anxiety or even I think ADHD in some cases, you know, some of these things, people are very uncomfortable to talk about sharing that. I also shared that story with you in the prep. So I have a daughter who's 13, but when she's about six, I told her we had to go to the doctor in September. And she's like, well, I'm not sick, Mom. I'm fine. Why are we going to the doctor? And I said, oh, well, honey, you know, every year you have a physical, you get your body checked, make sure you're growing properly. And the doctor likes to see your progress. And she goes, oh, okay. She goes, well, what is my mental? And I was like, oh, yeah, great question. When is our mental, right? If you're not regularly engaging a therapist, and again, we talk about this crisis mode. I think that's when most people, I'm just making an assumption, are seeking out therapy. They've finally said, this is enough. I need help. I need to talk to someone. But why should it not be this normal annual thing where we get checkups and we talk to a mental health professional to say, this is how I'm feeling, this is what's going on. You go get your blood work and your, you know, heart listened to by your GP. Like, why would you not do that with a mental health professional as well to get this kind of baseline of functioning? Right. It's, yeah, and it's not, and we aren't, I mean, when you look at those stats, Sonia, we're not, it's not there yet. People aren't even seeking it out now when it's been made so easy to do it virtually during the pandemic, right? You have all these apps now. You can just like click a button and talk to a therapist and people still aren't doing it.
And, well, and to your point, like if crisis mode is what triggers it and we're in severe crisis mode and we're getting 11% of people saying they're seeking out help, like what happens when there is no crisis? Like I think much like a lot of other things that, you know, we're trying to talk about now, you know, within somewhat our bubble and really get it out there, is it's clear how much mental health needs to be talked about. And in the story about your daughter, like this is the second time I heard you say it. And I got goosebumps the exact same way as the first time you said it, because I thought it is incredible for kids, you know, before life has an impact on them, how clearly they see things. Yeah, for somebody so young to just say something that's so intuitive, that it makes all the sense in the world. Yet somehow when we grow up, to your point, it's, you know, oh, you don't really talk about that and you don't know what that really is. And, you know, maybe I'm just tired or I don't know, or I don't want to tell my friends because I don't know what they're going to think. And, you know, now translating that and looking at what happens in workplaces. Oh, you know, if we can, if we still are not seeking help, if we probably have a challenge even telling our families about it, how do we show up to work when we need that kind of help? You know, and I think that there's still so much organizations can do to normalize it. And that's an area too where they can be so vocal and be such a huge frontier and such a huge change agent when it comes to really making it not only okay, but like really encouraging for people to open up when they have challenges and need help.
Well, and for organizations, there's always the, you know, cost benefit analysis or whatever, right? Like, why would they bother? Well, clearly, if your employees are taken care of and are able to you know, get some support when they're handling life challenges that every single person is going to have at some point or another, you know, that's good for retention. It's good for engagement. It's good for a lot of things that, you know, directly speak to your bottom line or whatever. So even though this might seem like a kind of other, you know, kind of activity, it's actually not. It should be front and center. You know, how do you, as an organization, take care of your people should be front and center, you know?
I think there's an evolution that is happening. And I think that there are some organizations that are ahead of the evolution, and there's you know, the laggers. And the evolution is moving from the management style of the, you know, early 20th century, the command and control, the people are interchangeable. Well, you can't do the job, just get the next person in here. Like, that is, no, that is not possible. No two humans are the same. Maybe you can find two people with the same skill set, but they're not gonna have the same background, life experiences that they can bring to the job to enhance it. They're not gonna have the same personality. Do they even fit in right? They're not gonna have the same, you know, life experience. I mean, there are no two people the same. And the organizations, I swear, if after a year like we just had, did not show you how important humans are, even with AI, even with machine learning, even with automation, you're talking to an organization that does all of that. And I'm telling you, people are still the most important resource to any organization, because people have to program those things. People have to create those things. People have to maintain those things, right? You need to treat your people like humans, individual humans, and give them a unique experience and show that they can bring their entire best self to work and be supported, whether they're having a great day or whether they take the day off for a mental health day. That's all okay.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know, I had actually a funny story recently where I was talking to one of my colleagues and I said, oh, you know, I'm an organizational psychologist. I was like, what do you do? Which is a fair question. And I said, you know, like, really my focus is on, you know, leadership development and motivation, and I want to make people happy at work and engage. He's like, oh, that's great. But hey, I have a question. So with everything that's going on, and do you think like organizations are going to hire like therapists to be on staff so if people need help? And I was like, well, that's a brilliant question. Like, that's not an organizational psychologist, but I'm so glad that sparked, you know, that thought, because to what both of you were saying earlier, like, now for a lot of organizations, especially with technology, it's more approachable, whether it's access to an app and giving all of your employees saying, you know, hey, here's an application, you can, you know, get a therapist, get a coach, get a psychologist, or even just hiring someone, and they don't necessarily have to be like in an office. Like, a lot of companies will have like, oh, here's a masseuse and you can sign up, and you could probably do that and hopefully people will be comfortable enough, but you could also decide to do it digitally. But how amazing of an idea is that to say so many people are going through such transitions? It probably wouldn't cost an organization that much to get just somebody part-time and really help people in this profound way. Like, I loved how when he was just thinking about like, oh, organizational psychologist, and I was like, well, yeah, unfortunately I can't, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist. But I love that idea. And I don't actually know many organizations that do that today. I know some do, but I hope that that's definitely a trend that we see, you know, increasing over time.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. It makes me think of the TV show Billions. Have you ever watched that?
I have.
They have
Wendy. Wendy is my girl. Oh,
spirit animal. But I completely agree with you. But as you were talking, I was like, I should practice what I preach. Like, why does an Inspirant group offer an annual mental? Like, why? I've got a connection. I've got a network of clinical psychologists. We could, you know, have an annual a benefit that Inspirant offers to our team. I mean, that's easy. That is so really easy to do. Yeah.
And I think, you know, maybe like one thing, and hopefully all of us, you know, with this conversation, with just conversation that we're having with anybody that will listen, is to say exactly what you just said, Meg. I see all these articles where people are rethinking benefits, and is it now a gym membership or is it an app? I don't see this nearly enough. So I think almost as much as possible, whenever somebody gives us a mic or an opportunity to talk or write a blog post or do whatever, this is such, I think, an important thing to insert because the barrier to it is not very high. And I think maybe some organizations are not doing it at this point, probably because they haven't even thought of it. Not because, oh, we're calculating the, you know, cost benefit ratio.
Right.
It's probably really low at this point. Like the cost is so low to the benefit, but I think it's a no-brainer as long as it's top of mind for you to insert that. And now again, as you know, hybrid working and all, how are organizations going to go back? And there are all these statistics around the number of people who are thinking about changing jobs. Hopefully now is that tipping point where it's really good for companies to insert something like that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, it feels like low-hanging fruit. So I think that's one of the things we do in this whole series want to come up with is just some ideas, like Sonia was saying, to just, you know, spark your thinking. If you're listening to this and you think, you know, that's actually not that hard to do for us, you know. So hopefully.
And yeah, because a lot of what we talk about too, and we, you know, we didn't talk about empathy too much today, even though I think it weaves itself into almost every one of our conversations, is that it's important for people to be empathetic at work. It's important for managers to be empathetic at work, but that takes development and it takes time. And it's not like a switch where you're going to get all of your managers on a call and all of your leaders and say, you need to be empathetic to your people. There's training, there's coaching, there's development. Some people can more innately relate to others. Some people need to work at it a little more. And so I think to me, that's definitely a mid to long-term strategy and goal, but it's not an either or. And also, I mean, I imagine if somebody, you know, on my team came to me, and I hope people are really comfortable with me, I try to create that environment, but if somebody came and said, you know, that they feel like they're getting depressed or they're going through something really significant, even being an organizational psychologist, I'm not equipped to give them the support they need. How amazing would it be that while I can listen to them with empathy and really support them, I also have this outlet to say, hey, you know, remember we have this resource in our organization. Why don't you reach out to them? I think that could be really helpful. So I think it's, as we're creating hopefully this very different world of work where mental health is not a taboo topic, where people can bring their whole selves to work, that it's something that's really going to help us build out that ecosystem in a more profound way.
Empathy is so near and dear to my heart. And I know Sonia and I connected on a Brene moment. She has some really good information. Maybe we could put that in the show notes. But it's something that Inspirant Group does. So one of our service lines is learning and development. And we have a couple of year-long programs going on in organizations right now around emotional intelligence and empathy, which warms, you know, this people love and heart, like the fact that organizations are bringing this kind of training into their people. But to give, if we want to give a couple little tidbits of how to be more empathetic, it does come naturally to some than others. But one huge piece is to listen enthusiastically, like listen. Yeah. Not with the intent to answer, but with the intent to really understand what that person is saying. That is a really great way, because hearing other people's stories mm-hmm. is the best way to feel like you're quote unquote in their shoes. I read this. I love this book. Have you guys seen the little book of Luca? You know, the Huga guy?
He wrote yes.
This is me speaking Danish. This is Luca. I'm showing it. If you guys watch the YouTube video, I'm showing the book here. And there's a quote in here that I'll just summarize, but he basically says, you know, listen to other people's stories. Once you hear their story, once you know the choices they made, you might think that if you were in the same position, you would have made the same choices yourself. And it's so true. I mean, you can't say that if you didn't grow up the way you grew up, that you wouldn't be someone completely different. So I just feel like there's a little empathy tidbit for you. Just try to really genuinely enthusiastically listen to people's stories, and then you'll start to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. And I remember when we were chatting about it too, is one of the things that I always felt pray for is the silver linings. So listening, but then saying, oh, but at least, you know, it's not this bad or this didn't happen. And I always was doing it like really just with the world's best intentions at heart. And then the Brené Brown short video that we were talking about on YouTube was like, oh yeah, don't do that. And I think, again, it's a learning process. Like, yeah, now, like, when I listen, I'm like, oh, just don't sell, listen. And it takes time and it takes work. But I think to your points, like, when you create a space where people feel open, where people feel like they can really share, it's incredible. And people are so grateful for that. And I think sometimes we don't realize how few places we can actually truly do that. So when you create that in the workplace, I think it takes people's relationships to just a completely different level. It just pays off like a millionfold.
And all of this takes practice. I mean, being empathetic, exercising the empathy muscle, yeah. If it's not natural to you, that takes practice. Figuring mm-hmm. yourself out, quieting your mind, and really like becoming introspective, that takes practice. You know, mm-hmm. they call it the yoga practice. They call it, you know, you practice your meditation every day. But if you don't do it, you're never going to get better at it. So we really, yeah. these things you just have to commit to, you're going to practice this every day and eventually it will become second nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, ladies, yeah. We're at half hour. I feel like we could just keep talking forever. I know we said we're going to run longer because it would be a shame to cut ourselves off in 20 minutes for this topic and having Meg on. But oh, Meg, it was such a pleasure to have you. You will have to come back. We'll have to do a bonus show or do something. It's just your insights have been amazing and your energy has been amazing. Just so wonderful to have you on.
Anytime. I'm so grateful. It was so wonderful talking with both of you.
Awesome. And with that, I think we are done for today and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.